We're nearing the end of Ecclesiastes chapter 10. We got down and discussed verses 16 and 17, but since these five verses all kind of form a paragraph in the chapter, we'll go back to 16 and 17 for a moment. And these are kind of some general type, almost proverbs in a sense, even though they lead into chapter 11 that talks a lot about giving and generosity, being wise about money matters. Verses 16 and 17 of Ecclesiastes 10. Would someone begin by reading those two verses for us?
16 and 17
of Ecclesiastes 10.
Woe to thee, O land, when thy king is a child, and thy princes eat in the morning. Blessed art thou, O land, when thy king is the son of nobles, and thy princes eat in due season, for strength and not for drunkenness.
In general, he's telling us that good leaders can bless a nation, bad leaders can curse a nation. So, and of course that's true of any level you want to go, you know, leaders of a state, leaders of an area, whatever. But good leaders are essential for the nation. Here he's talking about, in the beginning, when your king is a child, when he's immature. When he's immature, when he's not wise, okay, makes unwise decisions or makes childish decisions. Remember King Rehoboam? When he began, or when he was the king right after the divided kingdom for the two southern tribes, southern kingdom, and he got advice kind of from two different groups. He had advice from his younger companions and then from some of the older ones, and he chose to ignore the older advice and go with the younger ones, and it was a huge mistake. So there was a king, there was a leader who was acting childish, all right? Wasn't accepting the advice that he should have been accepting. And you could probably think of a lot of others that did the same thing in the Old Testament, but a good leader is one that is a true public servant, which is what he's talking about in verse 17. One who's a real public servant, which means that he puts the needs of the people that he's serving above his own desires. I mean, that's a real public servant. And so verse 17 is saying that. You know, some of the people in verse 17 were doing what they wanted to do with their time and how they wanted to do it instead of being kings and rulers and leaders. A public servant is one that's going to sacrifice his time and going to sacrifice, you know, all kinds of things being a good leader. But selfish ones are only going to be concerned about themselves. And it's nice to see good, true, sincere public servants because they do a great job. But you also see the other side where people seem to just be in a leadership position so they can have power. So there's power does corrupt. That's been true since the beginning of time, and it will never change.
We have a lot of those these days, don't we?
No, we don't have any anymore. They're all gone. So, you know, it hasn't changed. You remember Solomon wrote this over 3,500 years ago, at least 3,000 years ago. So we see that, you know, the same problems that have plagued mankind from the beginning still do, and I'm sure will always plague us as far as the leaders. Okay? Of course, some countries don't get to choose their leaders. You know, they're kind of forced upon them. But good leaders can make a huge difference, and bad leaders make a huge difference. So, I mean, it's very important that a country, a land, an organization have good leaders, ones that put their own desires kind of aside and do what's best for the people. That's a real good leader, not concerned about feasting and drinking and drunkenness, not their own stuff, but they're, when they get up in the morning, they're ready to serve. They're ready to do their job instead of doing what they want. So we have those two verses tell us a lot about what it means to really be a public servant. All right. Anything else about that? Any more comments?
In Isaiah, in chapter 3, he prophesying against Judah. And the first part of it, he says, I'm going to take away the mighty men, the judge, the prophet, the captains, and the honorable men. I will give them children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. The people will be oppressed, and everyone by another, and everyone by his neighbor. The child will be insolent toward the elder, and the base toward the honorable. I don't know which ones, but I'm sure this applies to.
That's an excellent reference, and often that's. When he's talking about leadership and talking about a child being in leadership, often it means someone that's not wise or immature and just doing what they want and not what's best for the people. And that certainly seems to be the context there. And a lot of especially Israel's kings, but some of Judah's kings as well, would fit into that category. One of the best kings that Judah, the southern kingdom had, was Josiah, who began when he was 8 years old. So there was he's talking about the individual's attitude and whether they're really, whether they're selfish or they're really giving, whether they're wise, it's the whole attitude about the one who's being a leader and what it means to be a leader. And of course that's true about elders. Elders are supposed to have that same mentality, doing what's best, not doing what they want as an individual, what might help them as an individual, but what's best for the congregation. That's what they're supposed to be, doing and thinking about, is the congregation, not, their own selfish or what they want themselves. So this, that applies to any type of group or organization, regardless. All right. You can tell by some of the topics that he covers that, he's really getting in things that affect us every day. All right. Would someone read verse 18 now, back in Ecclesiastes 10? Verse 18, please.
Because of laziness, the building decays, and through idleness of hands, the house leaks.
How many of us know that as a fact? Boy, you have a car, you have a appliance, you have a house, you have anything, and you let it go. In other words, you don't keep it maintained, you don't keep whatever it needs done. That's what happens. It decays, doesn't it? You can go buy a house, and it doesn't have to be empty very long. In other words, without someone taking care of it. And you can really tell how it starts to decay. It doesn't seem to take very long at all. And of course this is stressing laziness. Someone that just doesn't care. They can do it. They're just not willing to do it. Or I don't remember what version. Some of them have slothful. That's what they are. They're slothful. They're lazy. They're idle. Okay. God gave us hands and He expected us to keep them busy, right? Same way, he says, through idleness of hands or through laziness, the house leaks. I had to put a new roof on my house this summer. I suppose I could have just let it go on and on and on, and eventually there would have been leaks all over it, like at our high school. Well, that place is fun when it rains. Some of you remember that when you were there.
Still leaks when I was there.
Still leaks. Still does. All over the place. But if we don't take care of stuff, that's what he's saying, through idleness, in other words, through laziness, then we can expect things to decay and corrupt and stop working or stop working as well, all of those things. That's one of the things, it seems like from Genesis to Revelation, that God has stressed is His people cannot be lazy. Now, when you think about all the passages that talk about that in the Old Testament and New Testament, warning against being lazy or condemning people because they're lazy. Let's look at a few. Let's go to Proverbs, first of all. Let's first go to chapter 6. Proverbs chapter 6. And would someone read 9 through 11? Proverbs chapter 6, verses 9 through 11. And then we'll stay in Proverbs for a minute. 9 through 11, Proverbs 6.
How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man.
See, he talks about if we're not careful, you know, we can be idle, you know, instead of getting up and working, we can sit in the lazy boy or lay down or not get up when we need to or whatever. And what's the possible outcome? Poverty, need. We should be rising from our sleep. In other words, we need to be up and about instead of lazing around all the time. And that's what he's warning against. And he uses the word sluggard. The lazy one. The one that's not willing to get up and do anything and work. And, you know, when something, especially on, you know, talking about the building decayeth and so forth. If you're not willing to get up and fix the roof or fix this or keep that in good shape, then you should expect those things to start falling apart. Just like he says. He says they don't. You know, my house, just like yours, it's not a living thing, so it can't keep itself maintained. Appliances and cars, they're not living. They don't think. They can't take care of themselves. So someone has to take care of them. Well, that's our job. So we can't expect a car to last very long or a house to last very long or this to last very long if we lie around and sleep all the time, if we're a sluggard. So he gives us examples like that. Well, Proverbs 18 now, verse 9. There's a lot of Proverbs about laziness, but Proverbs 18, verse 9. Proverbs 18, verse 9.
He who is slothful in his work is a brother to him who is great in story.
Okay, someone who's lazy in his work, idle in his work, is a sluggard, is a brother, is kin to, in other words, is very similar to one who's a great destroyer. You know, sometimes we don't think about being lazy as being all that bad, but he says here it's similar, it's kin to, related to the one that destroys a lot. And, you know, we see that in our world and everywhere. You know, people not willing to do what they need to do. And as a result, a lot of harm comes. Man, you just think about our country and think about what we could do if everybody just did their job. I'm always talking to people about, you know, if they'd have just done their job, didn't ask any more than their job, just to do their job. All right? I know everywhere I've been, people have expected me to do my job. There's always a list of things, you know. These are things you're responsible for. But it seems like so many in our country don't pay much attention to what their duties and responsibilities are. And that's what he's telling us here. You know, everybody needs to be doing whatever it is they're supposed to do. All right? And if we don't, he says it's like someone that destroys. That destroys. And this is true in our, you know, we know it's true in the work world and so forth. It's true in the church too. It is very, very true in the church. Because all of us are given skills and abilities and resources and opportunities. And if we're idle with them, if we're a sluggard with them, if we'd rather sleep and slumber instead of using them, then we're going to be like a destroyer. You know, that'll destroy the church. You know, if you have a congregation of people who'd rather sleep as opposed to work, well, that congregation won't be around very long, will it? So that's, you know, that's just as true today. And he gave us, you know, Jesus taught parables about ones who were given various skills. Some used them, some didn't. And the ones that used them were rewarded. The ones that didn't use them were condemned because they didn't use them. And that's true of skills. It's also true of resources. Some people have been given more resources than others. Some are given more opportunities than others. So you could substitute any of those words in there. And if we don't use them, if we're idle, in other words, we can use them, but don't. Either through, you know, we're lazy, we're slothful, we're being a sluggard, we'd rather sleep and not get up, lay around. Then we're just like the people that were given those talents and didn't use them. And they had a pretty severe outcome, didn't they? Because they didn't do what they could with what they had. Thankfully, he never asked us to do more than what we're capable of doing, which is a good thing. I'm glad about that. But he does ask us to do what we can with what we have. And use what we have to do the best we can. In our world, if we don't use talents and abilities and skills, we'll probably lose our job, or we'll might end up losing a house, losing whatever, if we don't use, you know, what we're given. And that's true in the church as well. Can you, you know, the phrase lazy Christian should never ever be used. That should be something that's never used, is a lazy Christian. You know, Jesus set us an example, and he was not lazy. He was not lazy. He knew he had a limited time. Well, so do we. I have a limited time. My time is even more limited than it was yesterday, just like yours is. You're a little closer to the end of your time, just like we all are. Jesus knew that as well. He knew his time was limited, so what did he do? Sit around and slumber and be lazy? No, because he knew he had work to do. He said there is a time coming, he called it the night, when no man can work. That's true for you and me and everybody. And I think it's a tremendous lesson that we learn, that we have to use what we have while we can. Because if we don't, you know, dire consequences will come because of it. Anything? I've been talking an awful long time. A lot of my students get tired of hearing me talk. I don't. I can listen to myself all day long. But all right. So, the sin of laziness. Now, verse 19. Would someone read that for us back in Ecclesiastes 10? This seems to contradict a lot of things he said, if we don't take it in context. You know, that's true of all kinds of verses, isn't it? If we don't take it in the context of what he's been saying and other things he's said in this book, we'll come up with contradictions. Well, in what way does money answer everything? I wrote, money can be a great help. How's that true? How could money be a great help?
Well, if you use it wisely and put it to use for good use.
That's exactly right. I think that's what he's referring to here. I think that's exactly it. Money can be a great help if we have the proper view to it, you know, toward it. We use it wisely and not to, you know, don't use all the money for ourselves, but use it as he's getting ready to talk about in chapter 11. About being good stewards of money, helping people, being generous to people. In that sense, it can be a great help. It can help people with medical bills. It can help people with food and clothing and shelter. It can help send missionaries to different places. I mean, there's all kinds of good that can be done with money. Unfortunately, there's a lot of bad that can be done with money. That's the part about making wise choices about your money. So it can answer a lot of needs if we use it appropriately. And the Bible never condemns money, but it condemns the wrong attitude toward money. It does that many places. Condemns the wrong attitude toward money. And one of the things, remember the account of the man whose fields yielded plentifully? Well, if he had the right attitude toward his resources, he would have used some of that to go feed people in the first century, just like today, who don't have anything. They're in poverty, they're destitute, they're in need. That's what he should have done. But instead, he said, I know, I'm going to build all these barns and I'm going to store up a whole bunch of stuff for myself so that I can have all these things in the future. And then, of course, he was told, fool, it's not your soul's going to be required of you. So he had the wrong attitude, you know, toward his money, toward his resources. It was all about him. But if we are blessed with money, it should be for other people. And I think that's what he stresses here in verse 19, is that money can be a great help to a lot of people if we have the right attitude and if we use it like we're supposed to use it. But our world, you know, if you look at advertisements on radio, TV, magazines, newspapers, a lot of that is basically to, you know, for yourself. You know, buy stuff for yourself. And we all have to have stuff. You know, I buy stuff on eBay. That's hard to believe, isn't it? I love buying stuff on eBay. My wife probably thinks I get carried away buying stuff on eBay. But you can. You can get carried away buying stuff on eBay. Of course, you can get carried away buying stuff anywhere. But so you have to have, you know, self-control or a wife. It's the same thing. Self-control or a wife. So, you know, I think that's what he wants us to understand. We need to be thinking about other people and doing what we can for other people instead of, you know, being lavish on ourselves. Even though our society says, you know, lavish it on yourself. That's what our society wants you to do. All right, now verse 20. Would someone read that? But be careful what you say when you read it. Verse 20.
Curse not the king, no, not in thy thought, and curse not the rich in thy bedchamber. For a bird of the air shall carry the voice, and that which hath wings shall tell the matter.
Or, as we might say, a little bird will tell on you. That's probably the origin of that expression. A little bird told me. Little birdie told me. Okay? Be careful what you say. That's how I summarize that verse. Be careful what you say. You know, we have the expression, measure twice, cut once. I don't know if anybody follows that. But anyway, that's what they say. Well, that's what should be about our words. You know, think twice. And then talk once. You know, think about it before you say anything. And that's, you know, if you get really riled up and emotional, it's hard to think twice before you talk once. It is for me. But that's what he tells us we need to do. Even if we think no one is listening, right? Like in this context, even if we believe no one is listening, there's the little bird that might be listening, that takes it, well, in this case, to the king or whoever, you know. So no wonder he warned us about, you know, being careful. Because even if nobody hears it, we know God hears it. So we always have to think about it. You know, everything we say to anybody, regardless of what it is always heard by God. Doesn't make any difference where we are or when we say it or whatever. He hears it. We need to be careful about idle words that Matthew talks about. Idle words. Be careful about idle words.
Is that anything like three people can keep a secret if two of them are dead?
Yeah, that's. I think that's
a
very good example. It sure is. You know, there'll probably be a lot of things revealed in judgment that we never thought about. Because we always forget that there's always somebody listening. There's always somebody listening. No wonder he tells us to be very careful about what we say. All right, anything about chapter 10 before we launch out into chapter 11? Okay, then would someone read the first two verses of chapter 11 for us? Verses 1 and 2. These two verses have applications, I think, in several different areas. And I don't know if we'll have time to talk about all those different areas, but certainly the point is, the general overall principle, is that by sowing seed, okay, by sowing seed of whatever kind, casting seed, that there will be a harvest. Okay? There will be a harvest of some kind, sometime. We can't predict when or where or how much, but there will be. And first of all, we know that in a physical sense. And that's true of our money. I know several commentaries that I, especially the more recent ones, written in the past 5 years or so, stress how this is true financially. That Christians need to, as the old saying goes, don't put all your eggs in one basket. That would be kind of the financial application of those two verses. When he says, give a serving to seven and even to eight, talking about, again, not putting all your eggs in one basket. And that's always wise advice. I mean, that's always been true, and I think it'll always be true. So on that level, it's important for us to consider that and think about it. Because it can be very dangerous. As you've seen in the economic financial world the past several years, those people that had all of their money in one basket, all eggs in one basket, a lot of them lost practically everything. Because they all had it, it was all in one basket. And they lost it. So I think that's one application of this verse, or these two verses, actually. But the one I think that's even more important is the spiritual one, the spiritual application of this. let's look at Luke chapter 6, verse 38. Would someone read that for us? And then Luke 14:14. So let's read a couple of verses in Luke. First, Luke 6:38, and then 14:14.
And he stood at his feet behind him weeping. And she began to wash his feet. Is that the right chapter?
I might have wrote down the wrong verse.
That doesn't sound like what we're looking at. 7:38.
6:38. Yeah, that's it. Given, it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be put into your bosom. For with the same measure that you use, it will be measured back to you. This is in a section in Luke that's talking about being merciful to people, not judging and condemning people. So there's the spiritual application of what is said back in Ecclesiastes is just that. Golden rule. I mean, if If you expect people to love you, and I think most of us want that, then we have to be people who love. If we want people to forgive us, we have to be the kind of people that would forgive. If we want people to have mercy on us, then we have to be the kind of people that are merciful, so that we reap what we sow. I mean, if we sow hatred and dissension and malice, then that's what we'll reap. And of course, I think that's a very important spiritual application of those two verses. What we do cast upon the waters will return to us. If we cast out hatred, that's what will come back. Cast out love, that's what will come back. So it depends on what we're sowing, because we can't expect to sow, you know, corn and expect to get watermelons. Doesn't work that way. So we can't expect to sow hatred and expect to get love in return. That's not how it works. Never has worked that way. Would someone read now Luke 14:14?
And thou shalt be blessed when they cannot recompense thee, for thou shalt be recompensed at the resurrection of the just.
All right. And that particular context, of course, is talking about judgment day and being rewarded or recompensed, paid back at the resurrection, the last day, the day of judgment. Let us not be weary in doing well, for in due season we shall reap, if we faint not. There's a lot of these that that we could read in the Old Testament and the New that has that same principle involved, about how important it is to sow the right kind of spiritual seed. And that's true with sowing the gospel. If we expect a crop of Christians and disciples, then we have to do sowing. Wouldn't you be amazed if you had a great big field of corn come up and you never planted a single seed? Well, we can't expect to have, you know, 50 baptisms in a year if we're not sowing any seed. That's not going to happen. And I think that's another application of these verses. If we desire Christians, converts, disciples, then there has to be sowing that's done prior to that. Otherwise, we should never ever expect it to happen. So it's I think it's a great thought about, we can't expect to get something unless we're willing to sow.